evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Friday, February 7th, 2025. President Donald Trump's freeze on foreign aid has affected USAID-funded radio stations in South Sudan.
When we received the suspension, most of our activities, especially the training, have been affected, and also the operation, because we also get operation support from USA.
And South Sudan's National Ministry of Health declares an outbreak of mpox in the capital, Juba.
The Minister of Health would like to notify the general public about an outbreak of the mpox in South Sudan. This outbreak is declared following a confirmation by the National Public Health Laboratory on Thursday, February 6, 2025.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Two media houses in South Sudan's capital, Juba, have been affected by the U.S. President Donald Trump's 90-day hold on foreign aid. The Association for Media Development in South Sudan says delays in funding could affect the media industry in South Sudan. For VOA News, Dennis Logonyi reports from Juba.
The 90-day pause in U.S. foreign aid has begun to bite media houses in South Sudan that depend on donor money. Oliver Aterlual, a journalist working for Mayardit FM in Warrap State, says his station has reduced hours of operation.
We have found ourselves with fewer stories to report, leading to a potential decrease in programming diversity. So we might also need to adjust this coverage to reflect the changing landscape of humanitarian effects and the impact on our local communities. Like now, our people who listen over the radio that we are working on are actually not happy the time that we have reduced the hours for programming, because that time we work 16 hours, but today we reduced to 8 hours.
A journalist with iRadio, who is not authorized to speak to the media, says he received a letter from his manager asking him to work as a volunteer or leave. South Sudan in Focus contacted Stephen Omiri Obor, the chief executive officer of the iRadio, and Chris Maro, the chief executive officer of the radio community, but both declined to comment despite receiving funds from USAID. The radio community, a local non-profit founded in 2015, runs a network of community-based radio stations in South Sudan. Most of its 5 stations are partially funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development through its media program called IREX. iRadio, an offshoot of the Sudan Radio Service, was established in 2003 in Nairobi and moved to Juba in June 2010. A journalist who works at the radio community, who spoke on condition of anonymity, says he does not know the future of his radio station.
We received an email that we wouldn't be having any contracts because the USAID activities are all stopped, and that means no employment. And it left us with only the option that if you want to continue, you will only have to agree that you will volunteer. You have to sign the volunteer contracts for the next 90 days. And some of us, the family, depend on us. And even for the situation where we are living in Juba, it is really shocking news.
At Mayardit FM says the suspension of contracts has piled work on his desk after his colleagues refused to work as volunteers.
The rest have gone. They have gone because they don't want to work voluntarily. But we, the few who have actually tried our best to contribute ourselves to work voluntarily, we remain as 3. By that time, we have very many in the station.
Irene Aya is the chairperson for Association for Media Development in South Sudan, or AMDIS. She says after U.S. funding was frozen, the group has been looking for new supporters.
When we received the suspension, most of our activities, especially the training, have been affected, and also the operation, because we also get operation support from USA. So we have been looking at also other donor or well-wishers who would love to support our activities. We have tried to run around and meet different non-USAID partners, and we are yet to hear from them whether they are going to support us or not support us.
The U.S. government has frozen most foreign aid for 90 days, while all programs are assessed to make sure they serve national interests. In addition, President Trump has said he'll close U.S. aid. The aid freeze has been modified to allow waivers for life-saving humanitarian assistance, including core life-saving medicine. But many countries are working to assess the implications of what may amount to an end of U.S. foreign aid for other programs. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyo reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to South Africa, a country with the highest number of HIV-positive people in the world, but has also been a success story in terms of treatment and preventing new infections. That is mostly because of the money and expertise poured into HIV care in South Africa. A sizable portion of that money comes from the United States. But now, some NGOs that work with HIV-positive communities say they are in limbo after Washington put a 90-day freeze on aid, while the State Department later added a waiver for life-saving aid. NGOs that had already shut their doors say it is still not clear if this applies to them, and they are worried this could set back the progress that has been made. Kate Bartlett reports from Johannesburg.
South Africa has the highest number of HIV-positive people in the world, about 8 million, but has also been a huge success story in terms of treatment and preventing new infections. That's largely due to the money poured into expert HIV care here, some 17% of which comes from a U.S. program called the President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR. But a 90-day foreign aid funding freeze is in effect, following an executive order by U.S. President Donald Trump last month to check if U.S.-funded programs overseas are aligned with U.S. priorities. This has caused some initial confusion in South Africa with healthcare organizations and their patients. Tamsanga Sio, an HIV-positive transgender woman in South Africa, is anxious.
People are frustrated. They live in fear. They don't know what's going to happen. They don't know is whether it's stopped temporary or not temporary.
The Cape Town clinic that Sio used to go to has now been shut for 2 weeks. While the State Department has issued a waiver to continue paying for life-saving services, what that includes remains unclear to many South African organizations that receive funding from PEPFAR. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said this week that the waiver was clear.
If it saves lives, if it's emergency life-saving aid, food, medicine, whatever, they have a waiver. I don't know how much clearer we can be.
The State Department also issued written clarification and guidance on February 1st regarding what activities are and are not covered in the waiver for PEPFAR programs. The South African government says it was blindsided by the U.S. aid freeze, according to Health Minister Aaron Motsoaledi, who convened a meeting about PEPFAR on Wednesday. Motsoaledi also said he has sought clarification on the waiver.
If you say American money cannot be used for LGBTQI+, and we do the counseling and testing, and somebody who falls within that category is transgender, test HIV positive, can they not be helped? Even if it's life-saving.
Linda Gail Becker is a doctor and scientist who heads the Desmond Tutu HIV Center in South Africa.
This sort of is not one homogenous picture. In some places, it's parts of services that have been stopped. In other places, the whole clinic, if it was supplied by PEPFAR, has been closed down.
She goes on to say that some transgender health services have been completely closed, and in other areas, counselors haven't been able to come in. She also says,
or a particular service that is no longer available, or some community-based testing or mobile that is stopped. In some places, it is the provision of PrEP, and so on and so forth. So it's quite a mixed picture.
The PrEP she's referring to is pre-exposure prophylaxis, a medicine that prevents people at high risk from contracting HIV. Ling Shepherd, who works for Triangle Project, an NGO that provides services for the queer community, says there's a risk of undoing decades of progress.
The impact is devastating. The PEPFAR funding has been a lifeline for millions, and it ensures access to HIV treatment, prevention services, and of course, community-based healthcare. And without it, we are seeing interruptions in medication supply. Clinics are scaling back services, and community health workers have literally been losing their livelihoods.
However, he said, a PEPFAR shortfall will affect training, facilities, and service delivery.
The government said it is working on contingency plans that would reduce their dependence on foreign aid in the HIV sector. On Wednesday, a group of health organizations sent a letter to the South African government saying at least 900,000 patients with HIV were directly affected by the U.S. stop work orders. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
African governments gear up for what is to come following the 90-day pause in U.S.-funded foreign aid as they worry about potential effects. Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo has this report.
In response to the recent decision by the United States to freeze and review U.S.-funded foreign aid worldwide with some exceptions, Kenyan Health Cabinet Secretary Deborah Barasa said Wednesday in Nairobi that as her country navigates complex challenges, ensuring continuation of essential health services, especially with programs related to HIV/AIDS and tuberculosis, is essential.
For more than 40 years, we have been able to depend on pastors. TEPA have done a great job in ensuring that HIV patients and TB patients are receiving health services, with more than 3.7 million Kenyans being on HIV medication. But at this juncture, I believe that it is critical for us to think of sustainable solutions, domestic health financing, and again, looking at treasury and other alternative forms of funding.
While the orders have been modified to allow waivers for life-saving humanitarian assistance, including core life-saving medicine, which may apply to health programs such as PEPFAR, the U.S. President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, which works with partners in 55 countries worldwide, many countries are working to assess the implications of what may amount to an end of U.S. foreign aid. One of them is South Africa. With 7.8 million people with HIV, it's been one of the biggest beneficiaries of the PEPFAR program the past two decades. Its health minister, Aaron Motsoaledi, told reporters last week in Johannesburg that the country was taken by surprise by the recent decision, and they are still trying to decipher the full meaning. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says he has long supported foreign aid, but that it is also not a charity. He says the waiver is clear.
If it saves lives, if it's emergency life-saving aid, food, medicine, whatever, they have a waiver. I don't know how much clearer we can be.
This week, Motsoaledi met with U.S. embassy officials to discuss bilateral health cooperation and the new U.S. policies on assistance. The two sides promised to keep the communications channels open as they discuss life-saving health partnerships, according to a joint statement after the meeting. As nations assess their situations, Asanda Goesheng, a South African political analyst, said countries will be affected one way or the other.
Because a lot of public health systems, a lot of public health administration, a lot of public health infrastructure only exists because of the PEPFAR program. And even in cases where PEPFAR is not funding 100% of programs, any money that is removed means that countries simply won't be able to afford programs that they were able to afford with the money that was being supplemented by PEPFAR before.
Non-health-related programs are also being affected. In Senegal, for example, an infrastructure and development project financed by the Millennium Challenge Corporation, an initiative that was started by Republican President George W. Bush, could lose funding. The $550 million power project being implemented by Millennium Challenge Account Senegal was designed to improve the country's transmission network and increase electricity access in rural areas and those on the outskirts of cities in the south and central regions. Mamadou Chor, a journalist and chair of the media watchdog Kored, tells VOA Senegalese Prime Minister Ousmane Sonko recently addressed the issue.
Senegal has been experiencing the MCA in his second phase. It was dealing with electricity, mostly in rural areas. And the financing coming from the U.S. for this second phase will impact something like 12 million people. The day before yesterday, the prime minister launching a water project in rural areas was disappointed to announce people about this sad news.
Sonko emphasized the need for countries to work on being self-sufficient.
It's high time for Africans and other people to depend on themselves and not depend from the Western aid, because this is what can be the drawbacks. The new leaders of Senegal, they are focusing on national sovereignty. Ousmane Sonko, being the leader of sovereignty-defending politician, so they will have to depend on national resources to go ahead with the rest of the project, because there is no way to go backward.
Finally, in Nigeria, a country that received about $1 billion in U.S. foreign aid last year, officials this week launched a committee with members from finance, health, and environmental ministries to develop an alternative for some USAID-funded programs. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, women in Sudan's Darfur struggle. Find out why after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The South Sudan Ministry of Health has declared an outbreak of mpox in the country. James Othmai, acting National Minister of Health, says the ministry has deployed health workers at the country's entry points to screen travelers in order to contain the spread of the disease. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
James Othmai, South Sudan's acting Minister of Health, says mpox was confirmed in a patient who recently traveled to Uganda, where there is an ongoing outbreak of the viral disease.
The Minister of Health would like to notify the general public about an outbreak of the mpox in South Sudan. This outbreak is declared following a confirmation by the National Public Health Laboratory on Thursday, February 6, 2025. Using real-time polymerase chain reaction testing of a skin lesion sample collected from 31-year-old male, a Ugandan national and a resident of Kafuri Camp at Lurifayam, Juba, South Sudan.
Mai says the patient is under isolation and is being managed at Gudele Hospital. A team of experts from the National Ministry of Health, the World Health Organization and other stakeholders have been mobilized to conduct a detailed field investigation, identify all contacts of the patient, and ensure close follow-up.
The Minister of Health has activated the Public Health Emergency Operation Center to facilitate a coordinated response riding on the existing incident management system currently responding to cholera and other public health events in the country.
Dr. Humphrey Karamoji, the WHO country director in South Sudan, says his team is collaborating with the Ministry of Health to contain the outbreak.
With this outbreak, South Sudan becomes the 22nd country to be affected within the Africa region. After this confirmation, my team will support the referral of the positive sample to the collaborating laboratories so that we're able to sequence and genetically characterize the actual case that we have here so that we know exactly where it's coming from and what we are dealing with in this country.
Dr. Kidiende Chong, the Director General for Preventive Health Services and Emergency Response at the Ministry of Health, says health officials have been deployed at entry points to monitor for additional cases.
We took all the necessary measures to strengthen our surveillance system, particularly at the port of entries, including Juba International Airport, Numili, and other ground crossings. We are doing active screening of the incoming travelers. We have also put in place the necessary equipment the necessary supplies for testing the suspected cases.
A surge of mpox in the Democratic Republic of Congo and its spread to neighboring countries was declared a public health emergency last August. Mpox is viral disease caused by an orthopox virus. It spreads mainly through close contact with someone who has mpox, causing a painful rash, enlarged limbs, knots, and fever. The World Health Organization says since February 2nd, 21 countries have reported 21,085 confirmed cases, including 70 deaths. The three countries with the most cases are Democratic Republic of Congo, Burundi, and Uganda. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Juba.
Aid groups say sexual violence is a constant threat for women inside Sudan's embattled region of Darfur. But refugees also say it's a problem for those who have fled the region. Reporting from a refugee camp on Chad's border with Darfur, Henry Wilkins looks at the phenomenon of firewood rape.
On Chad's border with Darfur, refugees venture out into the scrub to collect firewood. The women say they sometimes travel several kilometres from the refugee camp looking for branches or tree roots to burn for cooking. But so-called firewood rape is an all too common occurrence here. This woman says she was out collecting wood when her group was approached by men carrying knives and axes.
We ran away. They caught one of us. I was injured near my waist but got away.
VOA has changed the names and concealed the identity of all the women interviewed in this report to protect them from reprisals. Sexual assault against women collecting firewood is a common phenomenon in refugee camps, according to researchers. For Amina, it seems there is no escape from the threat of sexual violence. Before she fled here, she witnessed other women sexually assaulted by members of the paramilitary rapid support forces in Darfur.
They beat and harassed people. They raped and killed. I saw what happened to girls in front of me and old ladies.
Rights groups say they've recorded dozens of rapes of women by RSF-associated militias in Darfur. Fatimata says she and her daughters were victims of the RSF.
They raped me. They raped my daughter, and she died. We don't sleep at night because we are afraid that they will come and kill us. It's a nightmare that never ends.
For these women, whether in the scrub outside the camp or the homes they fled in Darfur, the shadow of sexual violence is ever present. Henry Wilkins, VOA News, Adre, Chad.
Time we listen to comments from you on this program. We start with Jacob Diorma Chueng in Rumbek, Lakes State, who writes, "Good evening, South Sudan in Focus. As a concerned citizen, the frequent plane crashes in South Sudan is due to negligence from the Minister of Transport and Airport Authority. Allowing planes that don't exist in the history of aviation is the gravest mistake our people are making. Secondly, no certified dangerous goods personnel to screen at the airport." Another listener who calls himself Hakim Adinga from Yei, South Sudan, writes, "I express my concern over security situation in eastern DRC, where M23 rebels are battling the Congolese troops. The rebels need to adhere to all human rights values in wars. After winning victory, the government of DRC needs to find a political solution for the M23 before they reach a regional war." Thomas Kuntoch in Old Fangak County in Jonglei State writes, "Hello VOA South Sudan in Focus. I'm supporting the demonstrations at the POC in Unity State Bantu about handing over a hospital from MSF Holland to state government management. The South Sudan government has spent 13 months without paying salaries to workers, which is impossible." Peter Gotch Anyang Majangdul in Jonglei State, Bor, writes, "The attack on cattle herders in Nyelo village last week is an indication that the government has abandoned civilians to be doing what is good for them. Where on earth are civilians armed? And they can wage war on other communities? The national government should disarm all communities to avoid attacks and revenge that always claim innocent lives." Toch Chung Yokwai from Juba, South Sudan writes, "Hello, VOA. It is a good move taken by General Simon Gatwich for joining the government of national unity headed by President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Riek Machar. I'm wishing all of them to implement the agreement without problems." James Roy Majok in Unity State Bantu Town writes, "Hello, John Tanza and Jackson Vunganyi. I am appealing to the two state governors and with their administrative area, that is Pibor. Let them get a way to address what happens in some parts of Equatoria where camps were attacked last week and 41 people died, mostly women and children. Let us not reach conflict among our communities as South Sudanese." Majok concludes. Francis Oting Leo from Eastern Equatoria State writes, "Hello, John Tanza. It's a great loss to the entire country and GPOC for the loss of their employees. My sincere condolences goes to the entire families of the members who lost 20 people in the plane crash. May God bless their souls." Comments in this segment does not represent the viewpoints of VOA or the management of South Sudan in Focus. We prepared for you this Friday, February 7, 2025. We now leave you with Awilo Longomba and the song Carolina. Listening to Awilo Longomba and the song Carolina. Sometimes it's good to leave you in a dancing mood. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 3 here in Washington. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer Patrick Dare, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.